Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Matt Powell with my amazing co-host, Joe Staub, and this is the Business Beyond Performance podcast. Bro, how you been, man? What's going on?
Not bad, man. I am in the downstairs of my house this time, not up in the attic. So
got too hot? What happened?
I got some air conditioning going on. So, you know, that's not bad. Kids are asleep. Boss lady's at work still. So, you know, it's a calm night.
Calm nights are the only nights you can pray for. Two kids, and then with the third one coming, bro, you are just screwed.
Yeah, third one in 5 weeks when we're recording this right now. So 5 weeks away from having three humans.
Man, I mean, we're on episode number 12 right now, so I'm pretty freaking excited. Tell us who's on, man.
So today we have Joe Lego. So strength coach and podcaster. Part of the reason I met him was actually through LinkedIn. So his podcast, The Strength Coach Experience, is, you know, he's about 50 episodes in by the time we're recording this. And, you know, he's got great guests, great content. He's a great interviewer. Didn't know him from a hole in the wall before. Saw him a bunch on LinkedIn and said, hey, you're someone we should talk to. Reached out. Like most of it, we realized we had a bunch of connections. I knew people he knew. He knew people I knew. We had been in some of the same geographical areas around the same time. And, you know, we ended up having, you know, an hour, hour and a half conversation that we had to cut off because we could have kept going, just talking shop, talking training, talking everything. So it was just a really good guy who's doing what we're doing in a way, just coming at it from a different angle.
Yeah. What I loved about talking to him was the fact that not only do you understand the podcast, so he was extremely good about kind of moving us along and kind of keeping a nice tempo and a nice pace. It was a great episode for sure. But the other thing I respect is that he's truly an entrepreneur, right? He went from minor league baseball to working in a private facility to my favorite story from the episode is when he talks about how he lived with one of the families of a kid he was training for baseball for like a week or two on vacation. It turned into almost a month, but I'll let him get into that. But just the fact that he has that people skills, right? And those soft skills, excuse me, that allow him to do that just made him such a fun and, you know, entertaining guest to have on for sure.
No, exactly. And to your point, it kind of ties into some of the things other guests have talked about, especially like brings me back to Jesse Wright. You can have all the knowledge of the business, but if you don't have those people skills and you don't have the ability to connect, then it doesn't really matter. And, you know, Joe Lego, obviously I'm Joe. I don't want to just say Joe if people think I'm talking about me, but, you know, Coach Lego, how about that, has been able to do that really well, you know, overcoming his own personal challenges, overcoming, you know, the challenges of coaching during COVID, you know, life obstacles and everything. We get into a little bit of everything with him. So, you know, just a great podcast and, you know, just a great guy.
Absolutely. Hey, with no more further ado, let's do episode number 12, Joe Lego.
Want to say thanks to our sponsor, Strive. Nicole and the team at Strive have done what I think helps kind of close the gap in wearable technology by being able to measure the actual muscular effort or the internal load of the body and comparing that to all the external load, you know, speed, distance, G-force that someone is producing. You actually are able to see not only what someone did, but how they did it. And that how has been the secret sauce and the missing piece in my mind. It's kind of where the wearable technology needs to go. It's the integration of multiple monitoring modalities to derive a holistic measure of what someone did and then how they did it, which at every level from the sport coach to the strength coach to the athletic trainer, even to the administrators and the insurance billing and understanding why and what's happening when people get injured. It's literally a revolutionary thing. So definitely something you should look into. Wearstrive.com. That's WearStrive.com. Want to give an unofficial sponsorship shout out to Dr. Jim Stepani, Dr. Tim Sheets, and Vince Andrich, the later of the two who have both already been on the podcast, and JYM Supplement Science. So JYM, kind of like Jim with a J. Supplement Science.
Yeah, absolutely. Great product. Something that we definitely have been used quite a bit over the years. Great protein. And the thing that we both really appreciate about them is they actually have research behind everything. Dr. Tim Sheet, as you mentioned, who's been on the podcast before, went through and explained how they actually do the research, unlike most companies in the supplement industry. And they actually give out information that makes sense, and they help people decide what supplements are best for them, even if it doesn't mean they go with their company. But they prove time and time again that science and the research behind it are the reason why these supplements work. And then they give those, you know, powering statements and empowering movements to help these people make the best decisions for them and their individual needs as a consumer.
No, and again, never hurts that they're UConn guys either. but no, definitely JYM Supplement Science. Check them out. Again, it's top quality products with the research to support them. And if it's a brand you're not familiar with, it's something you should be familiar with either yourself or your athletes.
For sure. Joe, if there is one unofficial sponsor throughout our entire podcast, all the episodes we've done so far, I think we're up to like 15 by now. Who would you choose?
Well, Matt, we're actually up to 19. And the reason I know is because I write it all down in my Rocket book. Right. So I got the little one right here. I got the full size one on the desk. Right. It's something I use every day in my personal and professional life. It's been a tool that the last 2 years since I found it has, you know, from an efficiency standpoint, has changed the way I take notes, has changed the way my crappy handwriting can be digitized into, you know, typed Word documents for ease of use to send in emails and everything. So I would highly recommend, if you don't know what Rocketbook is, check them out, get one, use it for a few months. I guarantee it'll change your life. Welcome everybody to the Business Beyond Performance podcast. I'm Joe Staub. That's the amazing Matt Powell. And tonight's guest, Joe Lego, another podcaster, is here to join us. But he's not just a podcaster. Former strength coach, multiple stops in multiple different avenues, college, the minor leagues of professional baseball, among other things. And we'll let him get into that. But now he shifted gears, and we'll get into why, and he's podcasting. As you can see, the amazing hand-drawn artwork in the back from a buddy of his. So, Joe, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Joe, and thank you, Matt, for having me on, and just really appreciate you having me on and just being able to, you know, share some insight and kind of share my story with everybody, and hopefully it, you know, helps somebody out there that's looking to transition into a little bit of side hustle or just, you know, looking for something else to do in the fitness industry.
Nice. So obviously, let's go with that, right? So you're a coach. Give us the 1 minute, you know, give us that resume with the logos on it story of who you were as a strength coach. You know, thanks Ron McKeefrey for putting that out there and making everyone do that for like 3 years. So give us that and then give us why are you now being the strength coach experience?
Sure. So basically, just a little side note, I was born with cerebral palsy 3 months early. So that's always a thing that I've carried around. And I got into working out and things like that in high school. But I ended up getting hurt deadlifting, shocker, the exercise of all exercises in high school. And then in college, I played basketball and I got hurt again. And I didn't know at the time, but it was from my patterns. It was from the way I did things because I don't put my heel down on my left side because of my CP effects to one side. So nobody could really help me. And I got hurt and my career kind of ended. Not that I was going to make the NBA. I'm only 6 feet tall. But, you know, I feel like it could have prolonged a little bit. So I got the pleasure to go to LIU in Brooklyn. I started taking some exercise science classes and I learned through there. I was very good at the classes because through, you know, from ninth grade on, I was working out by myself and I couldn't just open up your muscle and fitness and start and go right in and do what they written down. I had to learn because my right side will always favor, it's always stronger, so it would always make up for the left side. So I had to kind of learn how to do every exercise. From that, I learned in college when I was in there my junior year, I just understood biomechanics and kinesiology right away because it was being able to teach people. So did very well in the classes. One of the teachers who was the soccer coach said, hey, you should start working with the strength coach. You don't need to be in here. This is too easy for you. You know, you're blowing everybody away. Started working with the strength coach. Wanted nothing to really do with it. Got my bachelor's, was working at an Equinox. He called me in one day and said, look, come and watch volleyball. If you hate it, I'll never bother you again. I went in there and I said, you know, shit, I think I want to do this. With my parents' support, they said, we'll let you go. I interned at LIU, interned at Iona, became a volunteer, but, you know, kind of the right-hand person of the strength coach. Got the opportunity to go to TCU, went there. Became the GA, and then halfway through being a GA, I was offered the job with the New York Mets, spent 3 years there, came out there, which we'll get into. And then I started my own business. And it was really kind of, you know, like we're talking about as a side hustle, I just was kind of forced to it. You know, I was out of strength and conditioning and I didn't know what else to do. And you know, it's not like you can, as you know, you can't get out of one thing and jump right into another. You know, people don't hand out jobs like that. So I was at your basic performance facility and I just started, you know, luckily started training a young kid and then another one was on there. And then, you know, we went through that a few years and then COVID happened and here we are with the podcast. You know, I'll get into it more, but for me, it was more a forced, you know, it was, I know I have this ability to coach. I didn't get fired because I didn't do my job. It was more hierarchy and the nonsense we deal with. And I knew that there was still stuff in there and I had an, you know, unique way to get, you know, get stuff out of my athletes. They all loved me. They all trusted me. And I still talk to a lot of them today. And so I knew I wasn't done. And that's where the kind of the side hustle and doing things on your own came from.
Nice. So, hey, quick question. At Iona, who'd you work with? Who's the head at the time?
Ryan Carr.
So I knew Kelly Shaver when he was there. Shout out to Kelly. Great guy. So no, I just wanted to see if you were there at the same time, because obviously I was at Hofstra at one point. So I've been on the island, you know, so I'm not an island guy like you were, but at least I was there for a little while. All right. So hit me, right? So you're kind of like me in a sense, right? So you bounced around, you worked, you loved what you did. And you got to the point, you know, I chose to get out. You, because of circumstance and COVID and everything else, kind of, that's just the way the cookie crumbled for you. So we went into other things. And you said people just don't hand jobs out, right? 100% agree. You fell upward, right? You fell upward because I imagine just by listening to you, right? You're an intense guy. You're going to learn. You're going to get after it. You're not just going to sit there and say, woe is me. You know, I feel bad for myself. So how did you start getting into the podcast side? You know, so let me actually back it up. How did you prepare for the business side of what you're doing? And then how are you today on the business side of what you're doing, given you've been doing it for a little bit of time?
Honestly, when I first started, it was kind of handed. I mean, somebody said, do you want to train younger kids? And the thought was, yeah, because when I was in college in professional baseball, these kids would come up that were the first round draft picks, but they couldn't squat or deadlift worth a crap. So I was like, yeah, if I could get them at 11, 12, and I could teach these patterns early, by the time they get there, nobody can really screw them up, right? If you know how to hinge and squat, it doesn't matter pretty much how bad your strength coach is, you're going to go kind of a long way. And I was like, you know, it's a shame because you have kids that were very athletic, but they didn't learn how to do things the right way. So that's how I started. So I got a kid. And, you know, not on me. I'm not a person that I did this, but I trained him. He wasn't the best with coordination and he became very good. And then I got another kid just by going to tournaments and BSing with parents. And for me, I had no clue. People just started kind of giving me money. And I was like, okay, I think we need to get a business account because, you know, you can't have a birthday for $10,000 every month that just kind of falls into your account. And luckily for me, the area that I was in was banking and hedge funds, and those were the parents. So I started learning that listening to these people. And for me, it was just understanding bank accounts. And I never have done any of this. You know, I mean, I had credit cards and stuff like that. So it was a learning experience. It was okay. This is how much money we make. This is how much it was spending. Originally, it was, I need this money to make my rent because the, you know, X amount of money I was making a week at a performance place wasn't cutting it. So I just started slowly growing that and I learned. And honestly, I didn't really get it together until probably the year before COVID. I would just work and you know, just have money and it was whatever. And then as, you know, I got into a more expensive apartment, I really started to do it. And I think now I have the best handle on it that I have, but it was all for me learning. Because as you know, nobody teaches about taxes or credit cards or any of that stuff in college. They leave it all out there. And especially in our industry, nobody said a word about money and anything. I mean, I remember I took entrepreneurship of fitness. We didn't learn an ounce of what to do. So for me, it was, you know, just luckily for me, the different stops I made, I was at Crunch. And not that Crunch was great. It was terrible. But there, somebody told me, never charge with your pocket, charge with who you're training. So that allowed me to say, okay, this is what I'm gonna, you know, charge, and this is where I'm staying. You know, there's no deals, and I'm not gonna undercut myself. So I learned to kind of push with that. And then I had the, you know, the fortune to work with somebody at a private place in Soho, and he was entrepreneur to the T, 24 years old, did it for 30 years, and now he's 50s, 60s, and he was a grinder. He was just, you know, I mean, we would still write people's names in by pencil. But what he taught me was, it's your business and it's what you make out of it. And then that started rolling. And then after COVID, I came back up here, but you know, it was the same thing. I got people that I would train in person, started kind of flowing. So mine was all organic, but luckily for me, I just got in the right people. And for anybody out there listening, if you start training the elite people, you know, people that run hedge funds and bankers, listen to them. You know, they will tell you how to do things, but you have to listen. You know, you have to kind of make it a point. And thankful for me, I was just put in a position where every person that I trained, lawyers, bankers, doctors, and I just started learning. And to be honest, I'm still kind of figuring that out now. But I think right now, you know, if you were to ask, I'm in the best place right now in terms of learning how to handle money and how to budget and do those things.
And that's so important, man. So many young fitness professionals, dietitians, strength coaches, athletic trainers, whoever, they don't do that, right? They're around a bunch of meatheads. They're around a bunch of bodybuilders, around whatever sport they're around, right? For you, baseball. For me, more football. For Joe, more the Olympic side. So they're around those people, and they're not used to hearing that. They're used to hearing position coaches say the dumbest stuff they've ever said, where they're talking about credit card miles, and they're talking about all this dumb stuff, right? So to me, that's so important to be able to expand who you're around. And you were lucky enough to have, you know, Long Island, which is one of the richest parts of the country. They have tons of financial experts, tons of lawyers, tons of doctors. Fantastic. My biggest question to you is, somebody who's in a smaller town, somebody who's in a Newburgh, somebody's in a place like that, how do you find kind of those people, and how do you recommend they go about kind of learning and expanding that knowledge?
Well, you know, I think it's identifying where you are. I think that's the most important for me. Luckily, you know, Long Island. And then when I moved to Brooklyn, I was Upper West Side, Upper East Side. So I kind of kept with that. But I think for me, it's, you have to identify your target, you know, and maybe that means relocating. But even for me now, I don't, you know, to be honest, I don't go around here. I've had to ask all the time, why don't you train at the gyms here? Why don't you do this? And I'm like, I can't do that. Not that I don't want to help the people, but where the price is, it's, you know, I have to keep the people in the city, because up here, they just don't have the money. So I think the best thing to do is understand where you are, what, and do your research. What do they pay at a private gym, right? What do they pay at a Gold's or a Planet Fitness? What are people used to paying? And then take that and say, okay, what am I offering now that's different? How much am I uptaking? Because if they're charging $30 where you are, you can't go and say, oh, well, I charge $200 now, because what are you giving them, right? Because the equipment's the same, the center is going to be the same, unless you find some amazing studio. It's all about your personality, but I think you can only put so many, you know, zeros behind that. So I think it's very important, if you're going into this, you have to understand where you are and understand your target market. And if you want to charge those high prices, now we're talking maybe virtual or, you know, gearing towards other people in higher society. And if you're in a small town, maybe there's a closer place where they offer some money. You know, being in Newburgh, for me, if I were going to, you know, move away, you know, I have Westchester's, the Nanuets, those places, Palisades, Rockland, those are a little closer, and then things are growing. But I think it's just identify the demographic, and, you know, you have to be, you know, you have to, I think, be honest with yourself too. You know, who have I trained? How much money have I trained in the, or how much money have I charged in the past? What does my resume look like? And then if I went to somebody with my resume, Am I 100% okay saying I want $100? Because I think the biggest mistake is you're used to getting $30, $40, and then all of a sudden you want $150, but what you're doing or what's on your resume isn't worth that, you know, as opposed to, you know, I think one of the things, you know, you brought up, Joe brought up with the resume as well. Your resume is I don't want to be exactly, you know, 100% with the capitalism, but it's about the, however, whatever's on there is how much money you can charge. Because if you got a bachelor's degree and you were an intern at one place, you can't come at me and say, I'm going to charge you $150. But if you have a master's degree and you've been to seven schools and you've worked with professional baseball players and everybody you've worked with has succeeded in their craft, or you're used to churning CEOs for $200 an hour, that's okay now. But if you're a person who you have a health degree or a bachelor's and you trained at your local gym for $20, I don't see you coming out with $85. And I think that's where the discrepancy is. People, they don't do that homework. And I think that's important in every business. What's my product? Who am I going after? And can I get this much money? Or you can do a little bit of pick a person, charge them the money, see if they agree, and then go from there. But I think that the price point is very important, because if you're charging a ton and you're not giving it back, one or two people might say yes, but it's not going to be a long lasting thing. You want, for me, for training is, I want the money to be like an afterthought. I like you so much, whatever you want, I'll pay for it. Not, 100%. We shouldn't be haggling prices.
Yeah, 100%, man. You hit so many good topics there. We usually let people go on the podcast and kind of finish their thought, which is why I kind of let you roll. And that was fantastic. A couple of things that you touched on that I absolutely loved. One, don't discount yourself. I can't tell you how many times, and this is obviously as a younger coach, I never did the private sector, but occasionally, like if a buddy asked me to help him or a friend of a friend or whatever, right? And all of a sudden you're like, I don't know, man, $50 a month. You know what I mean? All of a sudden you throw some random lowball number out there because you don't want to sound like a jerk, right? You want to be the cool guy. You want to be the friend. You want to be whoever. Whereas now I'd say, hey, X amount of dollars, this is my price. And if they say no, I go, okay. And I walk away and I smile and I just say, I don't care. And the other big thing is that you brought up, and this is something we talked about with Dr. Carwin Sharp, who's at the, you know, the Olympic Training Center. He's out there. He's had his PhD. He's worked at high-level colleges. He's taught at high-level colleges. A resume, like we were talking about, that demands a certain amount of money. And he just says, look, I take him out to lunch and I tell him, this is what I charge. This is exactly what you're going to get. And I want to have a like personal relationship with him. Now I'm sure it's more Zoom, but at the time it was in person. And he says, if you don't want to do this, I'm paying for lunch. No big deal. We're going to walk away. I want a small number of clients. I want to enjoy my time with them. I want to enjoy our conversation. And I want it to be a long-term 5, 6, 7 year relationship, at least, where we know each other and we actually get after it. So I think you just hammered on a ton of things that people don't think about when they go into their own private sector, or they do online training, but they don't offer anything except for maybe an app and then a couple of workouts and then maybe a t-shirt. I don't know what else they're offering. So those are all just fantastic points. And I just wanted to touch on them. Sorry. I think Joe's got one.
No. So I was going to follow up with the same thing. So a couple of things, Joe, again, we let you roll because you're hitting on so many important things for people to hear. Like the number one thing, don't discount yourself. I mean, we're all there, right? I remember being an undergrad and an intern and doing stuff for free for people because I wasn't in a place to charge. And I took all that stuff because I said, I just need the extra work. I need the extra experience. I need the extra learning. I was a freshman, sophomore in college. You know, now I do the same thing. Hey, like I've said it before in another episode, if you want me to take my time, you're taking me away from my wife and my kids. That's cool. Like, I'll sacrifice a little bit of time to do that. But you're going to fund my kids' college. So that's how much it costs. So if you're not cool with that, then that's cool. You know, you hit on some really important things. One being in the area you're in. So I'm in Northwest Connecticut, very blue collar town, very blue collar area. But there is about 10 to 15 minutes north of me, a very affluent area where everyone in New York has their kind of summer getaway houses. Especially because of COVID, they all moved up here, right? Little estates, little 10, 20 acre estates. So when I first moved here in 2017, I had no intention of coaching anymore. I was done, right? I said, I'm drawing a line. I will never coach again. I don't want to be a personal trainer. I'm moving into business. But then the bills come and life happens and I got a baby to feed. So I fortunately never had to because I had an opportunity to go in to do something else. But I was starting to spin up, Joe. It's actually funny, because I've never really told anyone this or never really talked about it publicly, exactly what you're talking about. I lived in kind of a small blue collar town. I drove 15 to 20 minutes up into Litchfield, right into the Litchfield Bantam area of Connecticut. I went to a Morgan Stanley and walked in and said, hey, you guys do wealth management for very affluent people who have their second or third house in this area. this is who I am. And I literally brought my resume to like a Morgan Stanley, like wealth management guy. And I was like, hey, this is who I am. Go to the resume, right? I had UConn men and women's basketball, Kansas men and women's basketball, Olympic gold medalist, all these cool things. Director at the Division I. No one knows Hofstra is like the smallest Division I. It's basically Division III. It's Division I, you know? So I had the resume to support the ability for me to walk in and say, hey, look, I retired from doing it over here because I chose family. I still need to make some money. So let me come to your house. I can charge you $200-$400, you know, a session or an hour or whatever it was going to be. You know, again, I never did it, so I never had to pick and make that happen. And these are people who had home gyms. But to your point, what was I going to do to be different? So what I was going to do to be different was I was starting to build this whole idea of train like an athlete, you know, be competitive, you know, kind of like if you've ever been to Dick's Last Resort as the restaurant, like I was going to yell at you and treat you like an athlete. Like if you did something stupid or you missed a rep, I was going to scream at you. You know, like I had to build that shtick to give them something different, to support the cost, to support the resume, and to support what I was doing with it. Now, again, I had an opportunity not to do it, but that was where I was going because it was the only way for me to make the money I needed to. So it's kind of everything you said. I had to go somewhere else. I had to leverage the resume. I had to create a difference maker in the product I was in, the service I was providing. I mean, my personality is only so good. So it's really funny that I never had to live it, but you did. And we did it in slightly different ways. And we're both successful. So again, kudos to you for kind of walking that path and knowing and learning from the people. And again, you hit on one of the most important things. You listen to people, right? You had other people who were better at stuff than you were, and you listened to them and you got better. So keep going, man, right? So you start doing this and everything, and then boom, COVID happens.
Yeah, so with COVID, and just to touch on, you know, what Matt said as well, I think it was a great point. You know, don't sell yourself short, but the learning part too. I mean, I always think of, you know, also get involved in things that you don't like, because that's another thing I'll touch on. But I was in situations where I was like, I don't want to do this ever, right? I was never a gym person. I went into a gym and I'm like, who in their right mind would ever want to own a gym? I was like, this is like a disaster that costs $100,000 a year. There's no way that unless somebody gave me a building and donated equipment, there's no reason to ever do this, because you're just paying for money. And as you know, people come and go. You're never, you know, the dream is always one team leaves, more come in. And it's this big, happy family in the summer that never happens. Right. And it's just, I just saw all these people, and I'm not being mean, but they're all balding and they're all overweight. And they're all miserable. And they're in their office for 17 hours a day eating candy bars. And I'm like, why does everybody like, I can't wait to open a gym. So that was always another segue just to add on. I never wanted to be in that. So I was like, okay, I can rent. But, you know, just to move along, thankfully for me, it was when COVID happened, I was training a family on the Upper West Side. I was working in Soho, and the mother and the family. The other thing I do with my business, just to, you know, as a side note, as a piece of advice, when I trained in the city, I would go to people's home gyms. I would go to their apartments. And I would go, and they all had these wonderful gyms, either in their apartments or they had people that they knew that would, I mean, I was training kids in gyms that were closed, but they knew the owner. So the owner would open them and not charge me rent. I mean, I was at, you know, I had, you know, wonderful networking abilities, and we were doing that. And I was training a kid for baseball, and COVID was starting to, you know, do its thing. And it was about March, probably 13th. And the mother goes, what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, nothing. And she said, we're flying to Florida. We would like for you to come. I'll pay you money to train the kids and stay in our house. And I said, okay, I'm supposed to go to San Diego in 2 weeks. Well, I don't know. And she said, I'll fly you from Florida to San Diego. Perfect. So I walked into my boss's office in Soho, and I said, I'm quitting. And he said, you can't quit. And I said, listen, I just been offered to get on a private plane and fly and be flown to Florida and to train a family in their house and not pay for rent. And they're going to pay me every day to train their kids. If I load this down, this is the dumbest thing probably I'll ever do. So fast forward, I didn't go to San Diego because they closed everything down. I lived with them for 4 months, and I trained them for 4 months. And the money I was able to make, I paid, you know, my lease and things in Brooklyn, and I was able to stay afloat. And then when I was down there, that's when the virtual stuff started. And I started, people started reaching out to me, just, that I trained in the past. Hey, do you do virtual? I didn't, but I didn't say that. Sure. Yeah, I do virtual. And then I just kind of learned. And then when I came home in middle June, July, my lease had 1 month up and I gave it up and I came up here. And then I started getting more people on the virtual stuff. And that's what happened. And I've been doing that. And then in terms of the podcast, that started because every day I was outside next to the ocean. Sorry. But I'd be on the phone talking to strength coaches. I'd be talking to my friends in the industry. And I was, you know, I feel, you know, it might have happened for both of you. You don't really know how much you miss the people you're around, right? Because you're so used to being around colleagues and clients. And for me, it was, you don't understand how much that affects your brain, right? Because you have people every day that challenge you and force you to create more pathways, and they allow you to think, and you're just around these different personalities all day that let you get, you know, some people you can vent to, others vent to you. Some of them you have to be quiet. But those things I was missing. And that's how the podcast started. I was on a few and somebody said, why don't you do a podcast? And like most things in my life, I said, how hard could this possibly be? You know, anybody out there, it is a lot harder. It does involve a lot more things, but I just went through it. You know, I've always been a person, you know, jump into it and kind of figure it out as we go. I mean, I love reading and doing all those things, but I've never been one to let's read a bunch of books and make sure I'm fully prepared. It's more of, you know, let's light it on fire and see how she burns.
That's the, I believe that's the Richard Branson, you know, if someone asks you to do something and you don't know how to do it, say yes and figure it out later.
Yep. I used to have that on my Instagram. Yep.
If that's not how you end up with your own, you know, plane armada, I guess. I don't know what the correct term there is, but I don't know how else to do it, man. That's awesome.
Doesn't he have a spaceship too? I don't know.
Yeah, he does. Matter of fact,
he does the fun things. Like I was like, I would do that. I mean,
I'd be okay with that. I'm cool with that.
I'd make an air balloon and try to break the altitude record. Why not?
Red Bull for days, man. So one of the things you said there, and we've had a few guys who have gotten out of the industry, much like Joe, right? Joe misses being around it. He might not miss the BS. He might not miss the athletic directors and the, you know, women's cheerleading coach who's very upset that things are not being treated equal in the random crap that comes with being a college strength coach, which I'm sure he dealt with, or, you know, the pro strength coach or the tactical strength coach, wherever you're coming from, doesn't matter. People miss that. And I don't think that really gets harped on enough, is that the burnout for strength coaches and for other people in the fitness profession is just so rampant and so high. And as soon as they get out, that's the first thing people say is, man, I cannot believe that I am missing this X, Y, and Z. I'm missing this person. I'm missing this conversation. I'm missing staff breakfast every Friday before the game or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So I just think that's so important to harp on, especially nowadays with, you know, how many people just feel alone with all this online world and all the crap going on.
Well, Matt, let me jump in real quick. It's one of the things we've talked about. And Joe, you said it. It's something I wanted to get back to, but the conversation's gone. So let me pull us back real quick. People trusted you and you still stay in touch with them. Like, I mean, I've said it 1,000 times publicly, you know, speaking and whatever, and on this podcast. I don't think that the best thing I did as a strength coach was get people better in the weight room. Like, it's not hard. There's a reason why a lot of people do performance and strength conditioning, because putting 5 pounds on someone's bench isn't hard, especially when they're a high school, college age kid. I mean, I could just make people do stuff and they were going to get better. They didn't have to be good at it. They were just going to get better because they were 18 to 22. Now, granted, we tried to make them do it right, to your point, teach them how to do it the right way so they couldn't screw it up. But I mean, I hang my hat on, you know, recommendations for jobs, wedding invitations, you know, birth announcements from kids who are now married and having babies and saying, you know, hey, Coach Joe, you know, I just had a kid, or hey, I just got married, or hey, I just got this big job, or hey, I just graduated med school, whatever it is. Hey, here's a Christmas card. How are you and the family? Because they valued the time, right? They thought I was truly invested in them, because I was, right? The outcome of the performance stuff was secondary in my mind to making them good people and trying to help them be better as humans. So let's get into that a little for a sec, Joe. Because you referenced it real quick. How much do you value that when a kid you used to work with who's now an adult says, hey man, thanks, or hey, look what I've done and I appreciate what you did for me?
I think me personally, It is the highest thing I value. I feel like in my life, everything that I've gone through, you know, in the industry, especially, you know, going to Florida, that is a direct result of the relationships that I've had with anything. I feel like, especially now, just from everything I've been through, every time something happens, right? You lose a job or you know, you lose a client or you have to move on or something happens, somebody from the woodwork or somebody that I used to train from someplace comes up and either they want to train or they have an opportunity for me. So, I mean, for me, it's the most important thing. You know, I've always said it, the most important thing for me and the best part for me, especially as a college strength coach, was watching a kid on the mound all by himself performing at his highest level. And there is nothing that I could do and really nothing that I did to get him there. I mean, we helped, but I mean, it's all about the kids. And I feel like, you know, anybody in this for money, you're going to crash and burn it. And not that, you know, money is the root of all evil and all that stuff, but it's just, you don't make those relationships. Those are the most important things. And I didn't realize that until, you know, I kind of got into, you know, the professional sports, because when you get into professional sports, you can't blow a whistle and make kids run. The only way they listen to you is if you did, they get to trust you. And you're looking at kids in you know, professional baseball, everybody's out to get you when you're in the low minors. The trainer doesn't want you to play. The coaches don't like you. So the only way that they would trust me is if I got to that next tier. And, you know, yeah, you go out with them and do things, but you're with them all the time. So they become like your kids. Literally, like, you know, you're in the hotel at night and that's who you talk to. You know, I mean, I have kids, just a side note, I could get stabbed in one of my off season. He called me, "Hey man, I got stabbed," you know, and jokingly, "Hey, is your left or right arm?" "Left." "Oh, we're fine. You're right-handed." But just that camaraderie and that stuff, you know, you brought it up with the wedding invitations. I just think that that is the number one thing that in this Instagram fake facade world that we live in, people need to get back to, because it doesn't matter what your six pack looks like or how many followers you have. I think the longevity in this industry is based on networking and based on the perception of what people have of you. I have all my clients because they like to be around me, and I have the ability to, you know, train them in a safe way because I've done the due diligence and got the education. But other than that, it's, you know, I've had people say 90% of the reason I train with you is because you make me feel good. I like to be around you, and I know you're not going to kill me, you know, and I think it's a big deal. And I also think that, you know, some people, they stay on the side and they stay over there in their comfort zone. And if you don't go over to that other side, so like I said, with my clients, they used to take me out to dinner. I mean, I used to, you know, they would cancel and they would take me out and they would feed me dinner, and I became part of their families. I would train the father, the mother, and then the kids would follow. So there was just so much more than the guy that came in and made them go on a lat pull down machine. And then going into college, my, you know, after the minor leagues, as a side note, I did my business and then I went back as a volunteer at LIU in Brooklyn, and I did it for free. And it was one of the best years I've ever had. And we went to regionals, and those kids, I mean, they listened to me. Everything. I mean, I took all the knowledge. I mean, early on, I was a scream and yell guy because somebody told me that that's how we do it. Then in the minor leagues, we can't yell and scream. Going into college, those kids would do anything, and they were like a family. I mean, it was at the point where, and I'm sure, Joe, you've experienced it, Matt, too. And I try to explain this to kids all the time. You know, you've made it as a coach when your kids know you as a person and you've never had a conversation with them about what happens behind the scenes when you're not their coach. They know your mannerisms. They know when you're mad. They know when you're happy. And all you have to do is look at them, and one of the captains or somebody will go fix things. Or you'll have kids. I mean, I had kids come up to me and apologize to me on their own in groups. "Hey, today," things that I didn't even know. "Hey, today in the weight room, we weren't on point, right? We went out last night. We were a little tired. We're sorry," right? I mean, it was at my last year. The captains would take things away. I mean, that camaraderie was amazing. And I said, it's all on the kids. I didn't do anything. I mean, they would come in, I would talk to them. And by the end, I mean, it was beautiful. The captains would run everything and I would just put it on the board and it was there. But again, just to touch on it, I can't emphasize enough your relationships, how you are. And, you know, I hate that this whole, you have to be a giant prick to do this. You know, you can't get rolled on. Now you have to have an attitude. You have to, it's a balance. The kids know you and they love you, but they know if they push things too far, we're going to kind of put them in check. I think that's a very big balance, but I mean, you know, that camaraderie is amazing and nothing's better for me. And I had a kid this year or last year with the Brewers. He made his MLB debut and he called me and he said, look, man, you're one of the first people I'm calling because I want you to hear from me. And I just thank you for, and I coached him 10 years ago and we just kept in touch and nothing I really did. I mean, the kid was a stud, but it was just, you know, everything that you taught me and just how you were and being there and just everybody listening. It's not about, as Joe said, you can have them do stuff, especially when you get to high level kids. I mean, they can stand on their head and blow bubbles and they're going to get drafted, but it's what you do. Are you there for them? Are you there to talk to them when they go through issues? Do they know that you're the one to count on, or can you fix things really quick? Right. I think that's where people get caught up. They're trying to get a guy that runs a 4.3 to run a 4.2 instead of saying, okay, what made him run a 4.3? How can I help him be better at that? And how can I make his time in the weight room the best it can be? And then when he has a hard time on the field, how can I help him get back into the mindset that's got him to where he is?
You once again hit so many big things and you just absolutely crushed it. One thing, I don't want to like make you guys feel bad about yourselves, but the last wedding I was at was my punter when I coached in Southeastern Louisiana line up. And he actually mentioned me in his speech in front of the whole family at rehearsal dinner. Look, wow. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. I didn't live in Florida for 4 months.
That's it, I'm hanging up.
So you still got me on that. But, you know, I just want to bring that up real quick.
And so, Matt.
One up.
So, yeah, I'm going to give you that, as Joe said, I'm going to give you that dickhead strength coach. You know, fuck you. Fucking sit in your seat. Listen to what I say. So, I married. Fucking, I was the officiant at two people's weddings.
That's not as good, bro.
I got a side one for you. It's not me, but my best friend who's a strength coach, he married a girl who's on the softball team, and we went out to his wedding in San Diego, and her softball coach married them because he's the greatest speaker on the face of the earth, and he's amazing. That guy can make you climb up Mount Everest in your boxers. But that's something I'll never tag it, but I'm just... But I think, again, both of the stories, that's what it's about. And I think people, they miss that because our profession, it's like we're like supposed to be gladiators without personalities. I mean, I get mad. I don't know if you guys have ever seen Draft Day, but we get our one shining moment in the sun and the guy's yelling about squats and bench presses. And I'm like, fantastic. Great.
I hate that movie. Man. Yeah. I hate that movie for that moment.
Lower the bar. So, Joe, right, you hit on so many good things. It's funny, right? So a few minutes before, I'm talking about the shtick I was going to come up with was yelling and getting people because, right, like, I'm a loud guy, right? I can talk to the wall and have a good conversation.
Yep.
I'm just loud. Now, I would always, like, tell kids, I'm not yelling at you. And people, like, look at me, like, I'm like, no, I'm not yelling at you. Like, you'll know when I'm yelling at you. And then if I ever had to, people would be like, oh yeah, like that was getting yelled at by Joe. Like, so no, to your point though, one of my interns used to think I was crazy because I would step back and not do stuff because if they couldn't figure it on their own. Right. So again, the way I boiled down, and I even wrote a book about this, go figure, right. Was one of the ways I described it was we use the act of physical development, strength, conditioning, physical demand, right? Whatever setting you're in, as a mechanism to build self-efficacy and confidence for the people we dealt with. And we dealt with people in the college space, Matt in the technical space, again, different group of people at a different age, at a different point for a different reason. But at the same hand, right, you're developing their ability to do something, to execute their goal, sport, the objective, the mission, you know, whatever it may be. And if you can help them be confident in themselves, right? To your point, you are helping those people realize, hey, I like having you around, Joe. You elevated me, right? Like you made me feel like I could do this. You hear that the five people in my circle who bring me up, that's why I'm going to pay you to be around. And again, that's to your point, people miss that. I can't tell you how many times when I traveled across the country from 2017 to 2019, just into 2020 before COVID, and I would meet young coaches. I would meet young professionals. I would even meet those bald dudes sitting in the weight room for 20 hours a day who didn't get it. They thought it was about adding 5 pounds to a squat. They thought it was about, I'm the man, it's my philosophy, get in line on the whistle. They thought that was the thing. I was like, guys, you guys are so far from the truth. It was, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, I think you brought it up. We're teaching life using a weight room. That's what we're doing. And I think that's where, you know, I just brought up the draft day thing. We're still put in that little jar because some people still don't get it. And I think what happened to me in my journey was also, and I'm sure this happened to you guys, is when I went to places, I would get in trouble because I made things look easy. And I'm not blowing smoke, but the stuff isn't complicated. Putting cones down is not complicated. Doing a warm-up that we've done for 2 years, I don't need a piece of paper and we don't need to go over it every day. And those are the things that, you know, I'm sure you guys had similar stuff that kind of pushed me out of certain places because I would get in trouble because I wouldn't make things look as hard as people thought they were supposed to be. Because I've always been just like you, I'm a curious person. Right. It doesn't take me 30 years to figure things out. Everybody asks, do you read books on weightlifting? No, I read certain things. I can go on Instagram. I look at exercises. I read the bottom. I read the guy's stuff. And then I say, OK, I can use this movement in my stuff this week. I don't have to go in and do everything else. And that's how I've always been. But I think it's just what you're bringing up to your point is that we still have people that it's about reps and they keep you pigeonholed. Because if we were put on if we were put where we're changing lives through weight room. The weight room is just the tool we use to make better human beings. And if you leave my weight room and what I'm doing doesn't have lasting effects on you, I fail. A lot of kids that I've trained, and not that it's good or bad, but they have no clue what we did in terms of the weight room or why we did it. I've had kids that were exercise science majors and they couldn't tell you where your lat is, but they remember the stuff that I did and whatever I told them made them better and how I was as a person. And to your yelling point, another learning experience, I was around coaches that had raspy voices with no voice boxes. And I was like, well, I'm not doing that because I don't want to sound like I smoked packs of Marlboros when I was 40 years old. So I was like, I'm never going to yell. And my first strength coach, he ran in Jamaica and he's still a strength coach in New York. He didn't yell. He was the scariest person on the planet when he was mad and he didn't yell. And he was all of 5'7", but he would stand there and take everything in and he was very philosophical. And then when he got mad, I mean, the hair on the back of your neck would stand up if he yelled at a kid. And he wasn't screaming. It was a look. It was, it was raising that pitch. So I just think, you know, those things that are emphasized are not what makes us the way we are. And I think it forever holds us back. I mean, you, me, and Matt, we shouldn't be trying to get into other professions because we were good at what we did. But you have to do that because you're not, there's no room for you. You have to either go backwards or you have to make your own thing. You know, it'd be great if you come out and they would say, how many, you know, take a photo, how many of the kids that you coach like you? How many of them still like you? How many of them push you to do things? You know, I think the greatest triumph in the world is when you get people that hate working out and don't like working out and don't want to be in the weight room and you turn them into monsters. That's your job. You take the kid that hates weightlifting and working out the most and you make him love it and you change his life through working out, not the kid that comes in squatting 500 and you got him to 605.
Go, Matt, sorry.
No, you're good. One of my favorite coaching moments of all time, similar to kind of Joe's experience in the weight room where you step back. One of my interns walks up to me and she goes, why aren't you talking? And I said, I don't need to talk. She goes, what do you mean? I go, my goal is to not have to say a damn word through the entire workout. That's literally my goal. If I can look at them, give them a little nod or like a little finger point or a little like expression, and they know what to do, I'm the happiest goddamn coach in the world. And she had the most confused look on her face. She went on to coach at Indiana, Illinois, Nebraska. I mean, every Big Ten major school you can think of. And she looked back at me or texted me, recently. And she just goes, yeah, I coached the whole session without talking. I just started clapping. I was like, that's it. That's it, man. That's the one. I'm sorry, Joe. Go ahead.
No, so I was actually going to jump in on a point you were just making about, you know, transitioning out, right? So the rigmarole, right, especially in the strength coach space, right? Athletic training doesn't have it as much if you're not in like the basketball, football. Sport nutrition doesn't seem to have it at all yet, though. Seemingly recently, there's been a trend in football where, like, when a coach leaves, they not only bring their strength coach, but they bring their sport nutritionist, their sports psychologist, their athletic trainer. They're kind of coming as package deals now. There's good and bads to that. But one of the things you reference is, you know, as a strength coach, you might not be at one place. So as any professional person in whatever sector of performance, you might not be at a job for more than a year, maybe two, maybe three, because you don't fit in, they don't fit in for you, whatever the situation may be. But to your point, if you're stuck only as a strength coach and you have no other skills and you can't go into a different industry, right? Like, one of the things I always said was, if you're a strength coach and you're a good one, if you can, if you know your craft and you can actually get people to buy in and you can actually create a plan that over time makes someone develop, not only physically, but also as a person, right? You're a $500,000-$600,000 a year strategic planning assistant in, you know, the business space, you know, a financial person. You could take that skill set and mold it with time into any industry and be at the apex of that industry, because those are things, you know, we had Jesse Wright on the podcast, the soft skills. Those are the things that matter more than, you know, hey, widen your bench grip up 3 inches and hit your pecs back, you know? So talk about some of that. Talk about how, you know, you're a guy, you're a coach, you have this variety of skills, you pride yourself beyond, you know, widen the grip to get your pecs more than your triceps. And, you know, you had to learn stuff, you know, you listened to people. What else did you do to develop your business acumen, you know, or how did you get a business savvy to get people on your podcast? Joe, you've had like almost, what was it, 42, 43 episodes now? And you have some damn good people on there, people who don't give other people the time of day. And, you know, not to say it in a negative way, but I'm sure they get asked 1,000 times a day for people, hey, come do this, come do this, but they're doing it for you. So how did that happen? How did you get to where you're at now?
Well, in terms of the business stuff, I tried to, you know, like I said, it happened. And then I tried to, you know, just learn as much as I could when it initially happened, you know, because I wasn't prepared. It was one of those things where, you know, strength conditioning and training for me was always, it was a natural thing, right? Talking to people just like yourself, I wasn't born with whispering or an inside voice. I don't even know what that means. I have high octave and screaming, and that's where it's always been. But for me, the business part was, oh shit, because I had no idea. It wasn't something that I could use my personality and my charm and those things with. You know, coaching came naturally because the talking and you know, and I was a little bit shy, but the knowledge and the confidence there allowed me to kind of put that over the shyness and, you know, be confident in my thing. You know, I'm sure you guys could agree the scariest moment of your life is when you're handed your first team, they all stare at you and you're standing in the middle of a circle and there's 60 people looking at you dead silent and waiting for you to tell them exactly what to do. But for me it was just, okay, how do I go about doing this? And so I just started kind of reading things and getting better with the business. And it was more, you know, in the last couple of years, it was, I just made more money than I spent, you know, that was just a thing. So I didn't really have to deal with that. But when the podcast started, it was more, I sat down and I said, okay, these are people I know, right? So I started off with people that I was extremely, extremely close to because I knew I wouldn't have to tailor anything. They were people I've talked to for 10, 15 years. My first 4, 5, 6 episodes are people I'm extremely comfortable with. And then I'd be on LinkedIn and stuff. And I'm like, huh, let me reach out to this person. Let me reach out to this person. And it was just all about, you know, hey, I like what you're doing. And would you be on my podcast? But really just, you know, kind of the sandwich method, telling them you like what they do, explaining to them kind of what I do, what my purpose was, and if they wanted to get on there. And then through networking, it was people that I knew, you know, there was always a you know this person and I do this person. We'll take somebody right out of the box. Lee Taft is probably the best known speed guy in the country, maybe even the world. Lee Taft's sister teaches at the elementary school or one of the schools next to me. He grew up in the same area and went to Cortland, you know, so right off the bat, there's those similarities, and then it just kind of rolled around. But, you know, anybody out there, just how I did it, it was just being legit, being going on and sending him a message and saying, hey, I love what you do. You've helped me tremendously. I've looked up to you since I started doing this. Would you be up to kind of be on my podcast? And then for me, it was priding myself in the format, having formatted questions, right? Although I like to go off the cusp, at least they had something they can look at. Having a kind of a detail format paper, having an email, having a legit Instagram, and making sure kind of the LinkedIn and the Instagram were there. So when people went on them, they would say, okay, he's not kind of screwing around. You know, I've been on a few where there isn't as much camaraderie. So I think it's very important to make sure you overdo it. You know, buying a microphone where your stuff sounds good, you know, learning how to edit and just doing those things. So I think, yep, exactly. So I think, you know, just to touch and not really ramble, it just be legit, you know, be you, you know, and just tell them what you mean and don't send them 50 things. And I think the other thing is people have a fear. Oh my God, that's so-and-so. He's not going to come on here. You know, luckily for me, I've had the amazing opportunity to be around a lot of people, but I also think I never let those relationships go away, right? I always, you know, not the best, but I never let them fade to where we don't talk anymore. I never left things spoily. I was always, you know, yes, I left the Mets, but in terms of everybody I worked with, we're still good. You know, I mean, I was surprised certain things. I had my friend who's with the Indians and he was like, I'd do anything for you. I'd be on your podcast. And we didn't work together that long. So I think it's very important just to take away when you're in person, when we get that back, you're always being watched. That's something that I was always told, especially, you know, Zach at TCU was a great help for me. And he was not a big rah, rah, rah person. He was, I know my craft and it was there, but everybody's watching you all the time. Everybody's watching everything you do. And if you're not genuine, they're going to say that, right? If you're a hard ass on the field and everybody hates you and you take that power pill and you stand up on your high horse and you find people, that doesn't do well in the realm. If the players don't like you, you're in trouble because they have more pull, right? If you were in professional anything, you know, if Derek Jeter loved you, but Brian Cashman didn't, who you think's going to, who's staying, right? You know, Derek Jeter's guy is going to stay, you know, but I think it's just be legit and just understand that everybody's always watching you and don't really try to be something that you're not because it doesn't work. On my podcast, I'm me. I say some stuff that's not the best and sometimes everything isn't the best, but I could always say that everywhere I've always been, I've always stuck to my guns. And anytime I was in a place where I felt like I wasn't me and I was holding back, I'll just share a small story. I was at a gym in Soho, the last place I worked, the guy I told I left, and he would tell me, do not talk to people. People are complaining that you talk too much. And in my brain, I'm like, yes, I talk a lot, but there's no way because these people are engaging with me. People that don't want to talk to you are quiet. It's not like they sat there in dead silence and I'm ramming their ear off. They're going back and forth. So what I later found out is that he didn't want me to talk to him because if I got closer to them, they might like me more than him, right? And you see those underlining things, but I just think that just be legit. You're always being watched, you know, be 100%. I think other thing is nothing hurts. Ask, send a message, right? I send messages to Jordan Peterson, Gary Vaynerchuk, Inky Johnson. I mean, they have millions of followers. It doesn't matter. Why not? You know, some of them might not answer, but some of them will. And I also think, you know, when you get the chance, especially with COVID, if it teaches anything, when you see people again in person, make sure they don't forget who you are, right? You touched on my last name and my stuff. Luckily for me, with my last name and my personality and booming voice, it's worked very well for me because there's times where I've talked to people on the phone and I meet them in person and they're like, oh, I know who you are because we've already put that, you know, that together. But I think it's just be yourself, man. And it's just, you know, always make sure that you're doing what you want and treating people the way you want to be, because if you're not a rah-rah person or you're not an asshole, don't become a coach and be an asshole, because somewhere along the line, people are going to tell either A, you're fake, or B, you're going to become that asshole that nobody likes because you're not really an asshole. So you don't know where it stops and begins. And so you don't want to deal with the repercussions. Sorry, you're not ready to deal with that, because if you're not a person who's an asshole and you're that way, you're not okay with people not liking you. You're just trying to play a part, and then you're all alone or nobody likes you because you're trying to kind of be something you're not being.
So to go along with that, again, you're hitting so many things, right? I got 15 things to say. I know Matt does too. I'm going to jump in quick. I'm going to kick it back to Matt, right? So first, with what you just said, the reason I never pursued football, I had the opportunity to pursue high-level football, right? I was fortunate enough to work at UConn at the time where they were really good. We went to a bowl game every year. We had, you know, NFL draft picks, this, that, and the other. I had the opportunity to not only follow sport coaches, but to follow other strength coaches. I didn't want to. That wasn't me. I knew I was not a football guy, especially I knew what football was becoming in the early 2000s and into the last, you know, decade. I would have been a fraud. I would have hated my life. Sure, I would have made some money and been in a cool place. I was a fraud. It was not me. It was not who I was. So I never pursued it because, to your point, I've always described it to people, if your values don't align with your actions, you are coming to catastrophe. It's coming. Doesn't matter if it may be a week, a day, a month, a year, whatever it is, it's coming. So I'm with you on that. The other side of this, again, you hit on so many things. I'm trying to pull myself back into all the different things to hit on, right? You know, it's interesting that when you talk about, you know, having the people and building the podcast, and then, you know, you started with your friends and people who you knew, and then, you know, you started with this tight circle, and then you made that step to go a little further, Me and Matt are the same thing, right? Like, you know, Joe, as I told you when we talked on the phone, so people know, right? You just went on this whole thing. You're talking about your path, your style, your opinion, your belief. That's what I did to you. Like, I literally LinkedIn messaged you out of the blue and said, hey, man, really like your podcast. Been listening to it for quite a while because you had a whole bunch of episodes out. You know, me and my buddy are doing one. I'm taking lessons I learned from not only listening to you, because I liked you, I associated with you, we're both loud, our name's Joe, you know, the whole bit, right? And said, hey, this is what me and my buddy are doing. If you're interested, I think you'd be great. We had a quick conversation on LinkedIn. We got on the phone. We ended up bullshitting for, you know, probably 20 or 30 minutes longer than either one of us thought we were gonna, because we came from the same place once we started talking to each other in terms of how we think. And then now, this is the first time I've ever seen you. This is the first time I've ever talked to you for more than, you know, 10 minutes on the phone or a LinkedIn message here or there. You know, the last couple of days, as we talked about, you know, Matt just had another baby. His wife had a baby. Matt has another child now. You know, I've been busy at work. You've been busy doing things. We're kind of piecing this together. You know, it's late at night because that's when me and Matt can do this. You're doing it a favor. But it was genuine. It was, hey, man, this is what we're doing. We like you. You like us. Let's do it. So, but again, it all goes back to, you know, the Tim Ferriss, if you will. You know, you got to reach out. You got to try. You know, if they say no, well, or they don't respond, who cares? You try. Like, you got to go there, though. So again, I think that's a key message that people miss. We're talking about a podcasting, you know, having guests, building businesses, but it's also, you know, you want to learn from someone, go reach out. What's the worst that can happen? They don't respond. You wasted 5 minutes. Like, so you scroll less on Instagram for 5 minutes and you send a few emails. What's the difference, you know? But again, something that people don't take advantage of more is actually try and reach out and build that connection.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point too, a couple of the people were, I saw their stuff on LinkedIn and I said, wow, I don't know how to do this, or I'm interested in this. Let's have them on my podcast and then we can talk. We'll talk about it for an hour. And then the whole time I'm learning, like, they're a guest on my podcast and they're thankful for, you know, being on my show. But in reality, the entire time they're teaching me, some of the people I've had on, I don't show it, but I'm in awe because you're just telling me, you know, stories and things like that. I mean, Mike Borowitz, I had the pleasure of working with, and then he came on my, no problem. And I was just, he's telling his stories and, like, I love talking to him and being around him. And I was just so happy for, you know, that he was on here. But same thing with him. I think that, you know, everybody out there listening, if you don't have a chance to know him or listen, he's an amazing person. And he is really one of the people and one of the first people. He literally sat me in his office. This was years ago. And he said, if you do everything right by God and your family, and you do everything with intent on making people better, and you do it to the best of your ability, you'll always be taken care of. And that resonated with me forever. And just another point, the guy wouldn't eat all day and we'd be at his facility. And this is when he's, you know, senior advisor this, senior advisor here. You know, he could retire and be done. He goes speaking engagements. He would not eat lunch to go coach the high school team that came into the facility when he was there. And those things were just a big part of my, you know, because I think to your point, reaching out and asking, but also, you know, when you can find somebody that is like you, right? We just talked about you and me. We talked on the phone, you know, I didn't know you. You sent me a message and then we ended up talking for a half hour and we probably could have talked for another 2 hours. I think it's also, you know, don't go on Instagram or whatever and look for a coach that has a lot of followers or is in the NFL. To your point, I knew right away I wasn't an NFL guy. I went to TCU because I knew that I wanted to, you know, football on my resume, but I went there for the baseball in that way, but I knew I needed to get it on my resume, but I knew right away I didn't want to do that. I mean, we had max testing day the first day and I'm learning how to wrap people's knees. And I was like, what is going on right now? Like, you know, whatever, but just to get back on, make sure that you, who you follow is who you are, you know? And I think that happens a lot where everybody wants to be, you know, Cochran or everybody wants to be like, you know, certain guys in the industry when are they like you? Do they have the same personalities, right? And, you know, can you go out and have a beer with them? Because that's who you're going to coach like. You can't, this isn't a superhero movie. You can't be the complete and utter opposite of what you are when you're a coach. And, you know, we've touched on it before. The closer you can get to who you really are on the other side of the whistle in the collared shirt, I think the better coach you are. You know, all my athletes know exactly who I am, every aspect of it. And we didn't sit down and, you know, have these conversations. So I think that's always something to, you know, resonate with. Make sure you ask, don't be afraid to jump and follow people that are like you, not, you know, sitting in a Lamborghini because they're a strength coach.
No, I love it, man. Everything you said was fantastic. And you knocked the whole interview out of the park. Joe, thank you so much for coming on tonight. We usually close up with the same three questions for everybody. Call them the terrific three. And the very first one is, how do you manage your own personal time and kind of keep that personal life to work life balance or integration, if you will?
I make sure that, as Joe said, that everything that I'm doing now is what I want to do. With my clients, you know, with COVID, I'm not thankful for COVID, but with the time off, I did realize I was kind of burning myself out, burning the candle on both ends. So now when you know, with the online business and not as much responsibility financially, if you will, you know, with certain things, I was able to see that I wasn't a happy person and I wasn't, you know, really like healthy, if you will. And I lost the passion for the gym. I think that's when I realized I didn't want to be in a gym. I didn't want to work out. I didn't want to be anywhere near a gym the second I was done with things. So I think, you know, just identify, you know, when you get to the point, because you have to grind, everybody grinds. But I think it's important to understand too, that there is a point where you don't have to grind anymore, right? If you've been at this for 10 years, you're not supposed to be a volunteer for 10 years or work for $15 an hour at some gym, right? Eventually you have to start saying, okay, this is what I'm worth and I'm not going to work for anything less than this. And also I think it's very important, you know, at some point, all your clients, as Joe said before, here's my price. This is what I charge. If you don't like it, that's fine. You can go find somebody else and I have no problems. I'm not going to chase after you. I'm not going to beg. And then in terms of, you know, people that you've had 5-6 years that are closer, make sure that those are the people that you're training. And, you know, with those people, you can give a little bit, right? I have a lot of clients that I've trained for a long time. If they say, hey, I can't make it today at 12, can you do 12:30? Sure. Right. Cause I love being around you. I love the camaraderie. So I think it's just all about after you've paid your dues. Cause again, if you're 20 years old and you just got a degree, and you think you can charge $200 and you know, do that, that's not the thing. But if you're at that area where you've paid your dues, you have that resume we talked about, make sure you value your time, man, because eventually you'll be out of shape. You'll hate the gym and you won't be doing anything that you like. And I think that's what really happened to me. You know, just to end on that, I was working at a place, I met some great people, but I was like, I don't really want to work for somebody. And it took me being forced to be out of the, because of COVID, to say, I'm not happy, right? I don't like working out. I don't like, and I started getting back into things, you know, running, cycling and those things. And I realized that passion again, right? And that's kind of where the podcast came, the conversations I had and being around people and kind of taking the parts of my career up to this point that I loved and making them part of my daily life.
Nice. So again, you're hitting on a lot of good stuff there. You're covering bases. I'm going to switch gears on you, right? Question number two comes from the side. So and we're going to do this one rapid fire because this one always tricks everybody. Mm-hmm. What's the best thing that you've ever purchased between $500 and $1,000?
Every time, Joe, it's not just you, but everybody.
Wow, everybody.
Same reaction.
And I'll preface while you're thinking, I'll give you this. It doesn't have to be for the job. It can be for anything. We've had people talk about vacations. We've had people talk about tools, skills, you know, whatever it is. It can be anything, but between $500 and $1,000.
Well, that's hard. I don't know. Now I got to think about how much things cost. I don't know. That's
man, hard. You must have really stopped grinding, man. You don't have to worry about what stuff costs anymore. This man walking through, grabbing everything.
I don't know. It's probably something like a hotel on a trip with my friends somewhere. I mean, that's probably the best because I love the beach and being around people. I mean, I'm not really in terms of material, I think probably a vacation, right? I mean, probably if we talk about the last month, me and my friends rented a house on the beach in Atlantic City. We went to the casino. That's probably it because, you know, as COVID's going on and as you get more and more into this, it's about the people. I mean, I think if you just to add to this for strength conditioning, it's probably conferences, being able to go and just meet people. I think that in terms of I'll go this way. The best internship the best strength conditioning thing I've ever done is I spent around $800 and I went to Altus in Arizona for 3 days with two of my closest coaches. And we stayed in Arizona and I worked with Dan Path and I got to see the U.S. Olympic team run. And I was at the Exos in Scottsdale. And that was probably one of the things I cherish, but you know, probably trips, not anything, one thing particular. I love playing golf. I'd say golf clubs, but every other time I go out, they cause me to get aggravated and I want to throw them in a pond. So that's.
So you spend a lot more than $500 to $1,000 is what you're saying.
I'm so much better golfing with one hand and a beer than I am with two hands trying. So,
so last question here, Joe. All I got for you is who coaches you and why them specifically?
Probably my best friend, one of my best friends, Drew from San Diego. He was on my second podcast. I wouldn't say coach, but we talk every day. I mean, he's from here originally, Staten Island. We coached together. He was infield coach, and I was a GA. And to be honest with everybody out there, I wanted to quit 1,000 times. And we had about 50 conversations at 2 a.m. in the morning on Fulton Street. Him telling me, you know, don't quit, you know, and you're going to miss this. And every day he calls me every other day. He's probably the best one, always checking out on me, asking what I'm doing. I mean, he asked me for information. We always chop it up. And then my other coach, Igda, is worked with me at LIU and works at the tennis center in Queens. Me and him talk at least once a week. And they're kind of the people that keep me in check. My friend Drew in San Diego, again, fast development, great stuff out there for baseball. But he calls me all the time, asks me what I'm doing, what books I'm reading, what's going on. And then I kind of help him. And then the other one, we just talk about stuff. And he's very good at pulling the information in terms of the deep science that I know, but getting it out of me because he puts it in situations where he knows I know the answer, but I haven't been challenged that way in a while. Just case in point, you know, why do people dig holes at the end of the rubber in pitching, right? And I'm like, I don't know. But the moral of the story is it's because they don't have the ability to pronate and push off their glutes. So they dig a hole so that their body naturally, the foot falls over because they are unable to drop their foot. Now, that's not something that people pull out, but I know that, but that's not something that's asked. So I think it's a combination of both of them. And just, you know, to touch on that, anybody that's listening, you always need a coach. And I think especially now, you don't have to start a podcast, but make sure you have those people, because without them, I'd just be, you know, floating around in the breeze. You need somebody to keep you accountable. You need somebody to play devil's advocate. But I also need somebody who is going to pull the things out of you that used to happen naturally while we were in weight rooms or in our or normal professions.
No, and so you hit on a key thing, and me and Matt were talking about it earlier. I'm actually in a couple of days going to Colorado to spend some time in the mountains with a friend of mine who is a coach who I shared an office with when I worked at the University of Kansas, Luke Bradford. But you need those people who elevate you. And I liked how you said, because we got a lot of guests say similar things, but never one who said it the way you said. You need someone to hold you accountable. You need someone to play devil's advocate. You need someone. So you're actually looking at them almost like roles. Like, you know, who's my guy who's going to call my bullshit? Who's my guy who's going to challenge my knowledge? Who's my guy or girl, you know, whoever it is in your circle, I'll just say guy as a catch-all. Like, who's the person who's going to do these, you know, these things to me? And it's funny because as you're saying it, I'm thinking, hey, I know who I talk to who calls me on my bullshit. I know who I talk to when I'm being challenged in the science of things. I know who I call to challenge me on the business side of stuff. So that's a great point.
Yeah. And for them too, that just happened naturally. I don't go to them. It's just they, again, the thing we talked about, they know me so well. They literally can tell if I'm sad that it does, they don't need to, it's not that I have to, they'll call me. What's going on with this? What's going on? They already know. And I think that, you know, that's just so important. You have to have these groups. You can't do any of this by yourself. You need those people or you're not going to grow. And if you don't have those people, go find them. I mean, it's anybody out there listening, you know, you have to go find the people. You just can't, nothing you do is by yourself, right? My podcast, yes, I'm in front of the camera, but without those first 10 people that agreed to come on my random show and never done this before, I wouldn't be where I am. And I wouldn't be talking to you guys.
No. So speaking of, right, as we wrap this up, one, thank you for the time, right? I mean, obviously it's getting late East Coast time. You know, Matt's got a newborn. I got two little kids. I got a pregnant wife. I got to go figure out what she's doing, where she is, what the status of the day is. How do people find you, right? It's obviously the Strength Coach Experience, right? They've been watching it the whole time. They're watching the video in the back. Obviously, in all the show notes, we're going to link your stuff. But, you know, shout it out for them. What's the Instagram? What's the Facebook, the LinkedIn, the website? How do people get Joe Lego if they're looking for you?
On Instagram, strength_coach_experience. I have a new episode every Monday, and I always have updates. Direct messaging and things that way is always the best. I'm always there. I always, you know, I'm on it all the time, not by choice, but, you know, when you start the social media thing. And also LinkedIn. I mean, that's how me and Joe met. I like LinkedIn. It's Joe Lego, J-O-E-L-E-G-O, just like the building blocks company. But no, sadly, I'm not related, or I'd be living in Denmark in a giant mansion made out of plastic bricks. But I like LinkedIn a lot more because I'm confident when people send me messages, I'm a little bit more trustworthy. Not to say if you hit me up on Instagram, I won't, but I get spam every day from somebody trying to build up my podcast because they love my whatever. So that's another thing. And then email is probably the least, but it's strengthcoachexperience@gmail.com. I usually just use that for, you know, the business stuff. So I don't like to get a lot of the stuff in the inbox there. But, you know, any of those things, I'm always down to help. I will do everything I can. I mean, I'll call you, I'll talk to you on the phone. The other thing is too, with the network stuff, if you have questions, chances are I might be able to, I know somebody who can help you or point you in the right direction. So always hit me up. I mean, like I said, the point of the podcast and the point of all this is get information out to people to help them as much as they can. I don't care about you listening to me. I don't, you know, I want to build the following because I want it to eventually be a platform where coaches who are good at their job, but don't have a job, can go and get exposure, right? And I just, again, you know, Joe and Matt, thank you so much again for having me on here. I'm truly honored, you know, that I was able to just come on here and share this experience with you guys and you know, just talk about my life and all my things. And it was great hearing from you guys as well.
Joe, you absolutely crushed it, man. You did a fantastic job. We really appreciate it. I mean, anytime we can help the strength coach experience and kind of come on or talk or whatever, man, please let us know. We'd love to talk more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Love to get you guys on. That'd be great.
Oh, and obviously if you want to share this, once I get it all edited and chopped up, I'll kick it over to you. So if you want to use it as an episode for you, feel free. Everybody, thank you for listening and we will catch you next time.